today's show, presented by Prime Video. We talk about DJ Burns, great American, Zach Edey leading the Boilers, Danny Hurley in UConn, Nate Oates in Alabama Final Four set, and the women's tournament has been absolute chaos in every imaginable way, including they don't know how to measure. Who go figure? All that, and we say something nice.
Time now for the College Basketball Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
I will now acknowledge the municipality of West Lafayette, Indiana.
Well, I'll be.
That's how big this Final Four is. That's how big.
I will not acknowledge that drum is bigger than the Korean drum because that is demonstrably false.
Ross Dellinger.
They don't know how to measure Portland or what?
They do not know how to measure the three-point line in Portland.
I mean,
there's a quote from Ross.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Basketball is a game. You got to be fake kissed in the tournament. And NC State is a team of destiny and density. DJ Burns, way to go.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod presented by Prime Video. DJ Burns Jr., great American.
Among the greatest.
Make room on Mount Rushmore for DJ Burns Jr. and the Wolfpack. 29 points, 4 boards, soul-crushing drop-step moves, little finger rolls around the basket, playing with a joy as he
dancing.
Took on the...
He was dancing.
Dancing against the Cobra Kais from Duke. It was... America just could not have loved DJ Burns Jr. His dad in the stands flexing.
Oh, yeah.
Just when we thought Duke was going to do it, finally something nice happens for Duke. Jamal Shedd gets injured, and Duke gets by Houston. And oh, goody, Duke. Along comes DJ Burns Jr., great American. Thank you for your service. And ends it. NC State, ridiculous run. 9 more victories in the NCAA tournament to get to the Final Four. Games in out in Arizona, not that far from Albuquerque. Something fun happened for NC State there once upon a time. Back when they would hold Final Fours in places like Albuquerque. But now it'll be at the football stadium out in Glendale. Pat, what do you think of this run? And our great American DJ Burns Jr., great American.
Well, great American DJ Burns is getting ready to play great Canadian Zach Edey in a splendid matchup of 600 plus pounds of post power in a sport that supposedly has gotten rid of post play. Supposedly all positionless basketball and you run around the perimeter. Not this Final Four, brother. We got those two guys facing off. We got Donovan Klingon in the post on the other side for Connecticut. It's a splendid Final Four. It's fantastic. But to address your point of NC State, incredible. Like an 11 seed, they've had every single game been do or die, 9 straight do or die games, and they have done it every single time. And they were miraculously lucky to beat Virginia in the ACC semifinals. But other than that, they've handled their business. They did have to go to OT against Oakland and Trey Townsend and Jack Golke. But when they got here to the regional semifinals, the Sweet 16, they handled Marquette. And then they handled Duke. Those are your 2 and 4 seeds in that region. And yes, pour one out for Jamal Shedd. I hate it for him. I hate it for Houston. I think if he's healthy, they're probably playing in the Final Four. But basketball is a game. You got to be fake kissed in the tournament. And NC State is a team of destiny and density. DJ Burns, way to go.
Unbelievable. He really possesses the ideal male body, what we all aspire to look like, right? Now, is incredible. You know, the DJ Burns story in the NC State story in general, kind of a duo, individual, team combination of why we love the NCAA tournament, right?
Like, yes, yes.
You've got him in, right? Like, you look at him and you're like, well, this guy probably isn't going to be the most athletic. And then what he did on the grandest stage is incredible. I mean, the last bucket maybe he made that was actually blocked. They called it a goaltend originally, right? And then went back and it was a clean block. But maybe it was the one before that he made while he was fouled, like shoved to the ground, and he kind of threw up an underhand off the glass and in. Just an exclamation point. Just incredible to watch. Such a fun story. Coach, right, about to get fired, wins the ACC tournament to get a automatic two-year extension, and now goes to the Final Four. These are the great stories of why we love Madness right there, all in one. You know, right? Coach about to get fired. This great post player that doesn't look the part but is, and then a team in general that's won 9 straight elimination games.
How about this, Pat, with your jumping ahead to him playing Zach Edey at Purdue? We'll get to Purdue, but, you know, DJ Burns originally signed with Tennessee.
Yes, he did.
He redshirted as a freshman and then left to go play at Winthrop. And boy, would the Purdue-Tennessee game may have been different if only Tennessee could have had 6'9". Yeah. Totally different ball game, right? Crazy.
Yeah, totally.
Totally different game. And they had him. They had the guy on the roster. And I don't know what happened. And it's fine. It worked out for, well, it worked out for everyone. Tennessee had a tremendous season, and that team deserves, I know they're not feeling real great right now, but they had a great, great season, and who knows. But he was on their roster and ended up at Winthrop, but then ends up at NC State and then goes. And it kind of goes with this entire crackpot of a tournament where Tennessee's best players from Northern Colorado and Alabama's winning games with a North Dakota State transfer, and this guy's from Winthrop, and everyone's just from wherever. You're just mining guys from, just get a team together and let's roll. And Kevin Keats and NC State got their team to peak at the right time. The guys are playing together. They're playing great. They absolutely dominated Duke. They just emasculated Duke. They beat them up. They beat them for loose balls. They were winning so many 50-50 balls over Duke. The thing about Duke, everybody, the pretty boys, and they're this, they're annoying, and I totally get it all, but they were tough as nails under Mike Krzyzewski, because you had to be. Mm-hmm. Mike Krzyzewski was never a pretty boy.
No.
And he got guys, maybe, but those kids were tough. I'm not saying Duke wasn't tough, but they got out-hustled and out-muscled and out-fought in that second half by NC State. And understanding, anyone who understands the dynamics of the triangle, you are NC State. You have won a title in 1983, and since then, not much. And in 81, Krzyzewski showed up. Carolina got going in 81. Carolina was good before, believe me, and Duke was good before. But then the Dean Smith, Bill Guthridge, Roy Williams run of dominance by NC State and the unprecedented dominance by Duke, and you're sitting there going, damn it, we're over here. We're the other team. And we never quite have the cooler arena. We never get as good a play. Maybe we get one guy, but we can't get it done. For North Carolina State to beat Duke twice in March in the ACC tournament and then on the Elite Eight, and to beat North Carolina in the ACC tournament, unbelievable stretch of play for North Carolina State. And I think those Wolfpack fans, who are extremely loyal, I wouldn't say long suffering, they have a nice program, but have to sit there and sit in the literal shadow of two dominant programs and four or five legendary Hall of Fame coaches. Gosh, it's got to feel good right now.
Oh, unbelievable. Like, I am so sincerely happy for both the Purdue fans and the North Carolina State fans, because they have a lot in common. I mean, incredibly great, passionate basketball fans. And yes, Purdue toiled in the shadow of Bob Knight in Indiana for a long time. And Gene Cady was a great coach, but he never got to a Final Four. And so for them to have this breakthrough, first Final Four in 44 years, North Carolina State, first Final Four in 41 years, and one of them's going to play for the national title. It's going to be awesome. I mean, the whole Final Four, UConn obviously has got an incredible fan base. And then Alabama comes out of nowhere and goes
a year
to the
later.
Final Four as well. Yeah, right. A year after
one year
they were
late.
The overall number one seed. Yeah. Doing it with a North Dakota State transfer and an Ohio transfer. Mark Sears, just incredible how good he is. You know, the storylines and the excitement for this Final Four, a lot of people have been kind of poo-pooing college basketball, men's college basketball, but man, this tournament has delivered in spades. It's going to be really fun when we get to Glendale.
The drum, Dan. The drum.
The drum.
Are they bringing the drum? All right, here we go. I will now admit, I will now acknowledge the municipality of West Lafayette, Indiana.
Well, I'll be.
That's how big this Final Four is. That's how big.
I will not acknowledge that drum is bigger than the Korean drum, because that is demonstrably false. But there is a settlement on the west side, as they used to call West Lafayette, the west side of the Wabash River in Tippecanoe County, Indiana. There are about 44,000 people living in that area. And hell, have your own town. It was once Harry's Chocolate Shop can be the should be the town hall. Zach Eady should be the mayor. He could spend 7, 8, 9 seconds in the lane there. No problem. Ooh, we'll get to that. Cheer up, Purdue. Boiler up. Look at this. I was really I felt bad watching the Tennessee Purdue game. It was like watching two fan bases, both of them waiting for something bad to happen.
Yeah,
and you kind of just wanted it for both of them. You just were like, oh, man, really?
Yeah.
Like, one, they both were great teams, and they both deserved it. But nothing against Tennessee, because I'd be saying the same thing. You guys are very passionate, underrated passionate fans as Tennessee basketball. They got that huge stadium, and they fill it.
Yeah,
it's not just football at Tennessee.
No.
But Purdue fan has been loyal. They love basketball. They're from Indiana. They everything, right? And Purdue, it's just this, it's this really good academic school that sort of just like, I remember, there's a great, like, there's an old Dan Jenkins bit, like, it's not one of these cool out schools like Michigan or Northwestern, and you're like, you know, they're so humble they trip over thick carpet, and they had this whole line about Purdue, like, great place to become an astronaut, but you know, what good is that? It's just this place. They just love basketball, and they've had their thing, and they finally are getting there for what was first time since 80. And so it's a loyal, generally when I'm watching the NCAA basketball tournament, I root for the basketball school, right?
Right.
So if it's like the team that's just a football school, and then they kind of just invented, they just got into basketball and they're playing Villanova, I'm like, go Villanova. This is your thing, right? Or whatever, Butler or whatever. So, but Purdue is a basketball school. Herzak, not a football one. And so getting to the Final Four, finally, there is a West Lafayette. I will retire the there is no West Lafayette gambit. You're going to have to win a national title before I even reconsider this drum going along with the drum line.
Maybe they'll bring the drum.
Baby steps. They won't, because they'll be ashamed to admit. You're all going to look at that drum and go, no. I've been to Korea.
I hope they bring the drum and park it outside. Oh, wait, you're not going, are you? We could park it outside your hotel room.
The Korean drum can't, you can't bring the Korean drum anywhere. It's too big to bring. It's like bringing an aircraft carrier. How would you get it here?
Dan, I am tired of hearing about this Korean drum. All right. Enough. Enough about the damn Korean drum.
Look it up. Even Zach Eady couldn't get a hook shot over that thing.
I will say, so I'm in Detroit for the games here, and I was just got back to the hotel, getting in the lobby, getting on the elevator. Guy, Purdue fan. Hey, love the pod. I told him we're going up to tape upstairs. We're gonna make this dude's day. I mean, well, probably Purdue making the Final Four will make his day. But Dan has acknowledged that West Lafayette is real. Go.
The breakthrough.
So this is like all kinds of wins piling up for
I have reconsidered my position, and there is a West Lafayette, Indiana.
How about that?
There you go.
Huge.
I love watching Zach Edey. I know everyone's all over him for the 3 second calls. I don't know how they miss those. The fouls I'm not as upset about, but there's definitely some 3 second calls. But this kid just is so, he plays so quiet. He's so effective. There's a purpose to every move he makes. He never gets tired. He never really seems to get, like, you know, when he played every minute, but like 33 seconds in that game. He's not bad at the free throw line. He's staring at I just love the way he carries himself and the way they just, hey, we got him. You don't. We're going to go into him and into him and into him. 40 points, man. Incredible day for him.
40 points, 16 rebounds, 39 minutes and 27 seconds, I believe, of playing time. 7'4", 300, and you play that long. That's unbelievable. I mean, that is stamina you don't see from guys that size. And yes, he has composure. He has intelligence. He has patience. He also has an absolute ticker of a warrior, man. That dude plays really hard. How many times does he get on the floor for loose balls today? When you're 7'4", 300, it's a long way down to the floor.
Yeah.
But he got there. I mean, he battled and battled and battled. And, you know, he's the 2-time National Player of the Year, and this was his best game probably he's ever played. And yes, I do. I enjoy watching him play too. And he drives the fans crazy, and he's really hard to officiate. I'll give a hat tip. Dane O'Neill from The Athletic did a great story on the difficulty of officiating Edey. Talked to a bunch of refs, current and former. And a lot of them said he actually gets fouled more than gets called, as opposed to the other way around. Mm. It is more a case of maybe he's been fouled more often than he's the one getting away with calls. So, and he bends the game, man. I mean, and Matt Painter is certainly smart enough to use him that way. Like, we are throwing it into him every time. You deal with it. And teams have not dealt with it very well. They can't. He's just too big, too strong, too skilled, and too relentless. And so I take my hat off to him. And it was fun afterwards to see him, you know, show some real emotion, because he plays in a pretty stoic manner. But to show some real joy, like everyone else for Purdue, I mean, it was such an emotional scene. Oh, my gosh, afterwards. Robbie Hummel, who was a great Purdue player, who blew his knee out twice for them, did the radio call for that. And he's a great broadcaster. And he's in tears after the game trying to interview Painter, you know. And Gene Cady is on the floor. And Edey cuts a piece of the net and ties it around Cady's hat.
And didn't have to get on the ladder, right? Didn't have to get on the ladder.
Edey never got on the ladder. He doesn't need it. 7'4". No. But so he
official
ties
ladder
the
of nothing.
Net. Yeah, around Katie's hat. And I asked Katie, I said, was that Zach that tied around the hat? He goes, I don't know, but I'm glad I got it. Yeah, I bet you were. Didn't have a lot of nets in his day. So good for Gene Cady. Good for all of Purdue.
He is. I love watching them. I know that maybe others don't. Maybe the quote young generation that loves the three-pointer and just shoot, but it actually, watching Purdue play, and today I watched them probably more than I have all season, and it took me back to like my days in college where I watched basketball, like SEC basketball, and that's what it always was throw it down to the big fellow. If he can't get it, throw it back out. And then guess what? Throw it back to him again.
Yep,
and
get a new position.
It's like classic, and it's great to watch. It's kind of like, to put it in football terms, it's kind of like watching a fullback now in football. And I was like, oh, yeah. God, they got a fullback. You know, he's running through the hole. They might even do a dive, you know. And it's great, you know. It's great for a lot of us to see that, you know. Everything goes in cycles. So history in general, and it's a blast to watch them. In hey, am I only my only Final Four team left, by the way? How's your bracket, Dan? How's your bracket?
Well, how is your final three?
I did pick Alabama when I had to, and I think I picked Purdue. No, I picked Creighton. Did I pick Creighton? I don't know. Oh. Some of them are still in. UConn I picked, so two. two out of four or three, but three plus. I don't know. Two out of three ain't bad. I don't know. I think this is part of the reason people really are enjoying the tournament is so the NBA is vastly superior in terms of talent, skill, individual skill, complexity of the offenses, every single thing, it is better. Okay. I'm not making an argument otherwise. That is how you should play basketball, and they have the brightest coaches and the best athletes in the world playing this sport, and they have used analytics to redefine how to play the game. It's a little like baseball, though. Just because the analytics say you should take three-pointers or dunks and everything else is gone, it doesn't necessarily mean it's the most aesthetically pleasing way to watch basketball. So, look, if I was running an NBA, I'm not arguing go back to the old style, right? Because you would lose every game. And also, college basketball doesn't have a bunch of 6'11 guys who can drain 28-foot three-pointers at this rate. Mm. But there's something about watching classic basketball. And I think that's what this tournament is. They're throwing it inside and stuff. So I think there's people just like, I don't really enjoy baseball when they just are, their guy's got a one hitter going and they take him out in the fifth inning and everything's matchups. And it's right. I'm not saying it's not the right way to play. It's just not as fun for me. I liked when it was a guy would try to go eight innings as the starter and win a game, or they would do different things. So it's just something that you can prefer a less exciting, the less superior way to play. Also, if you try to play NBA style with college talent, it's going to be a disaster because they're just rocking. They're just going to miss all the three pointers. But I think that is part of the appeal is it's like, yeah, it's a little like in college football. Sometimes you want to see, I think one of Michigan's appeals the last few years is they ran sort of old school football. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just, You can like the spread, you can like the air raid, but sometimes you want to see, let's line up and run this thing. So I think there's appeal to that.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Absolutely. No, variety is the spice of life. And we have that in college basketball. In the NBA, there's not. I mean, Alabama runs an NBA sort of offense. It's threes and dunks, right? They are 19th nationally in percentage of shots that are three-pointers. They play fast as hell. Their offensive tempo is third fastest. They just run and chuck from the outside. I mean, they're not just taking indiscriminate shots, but that's where everything goes. It's layups and it's dunks and it's threes. But then you've got these teams around them in the Final Four playing very differently, and that's the thing. And that's where you get a Michigan style versus a Washington style in the football playoff. It's great when you have there's so many teams and so many ways to skin the cat, depending on your personnel and who you can attract, that it's fantastic. And I just think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. And, good luck to the officials, again, who are going to officiate Zach Edey. He leads the nation in fouls drawn. He's a hard dude to referee because, you don't know how much to let go, how much to call. But again, this is what Matt Painter does, and this is what Purdue does. They dictate everything. We are going to play our way. You're going to deal with it. And against UConn, that may finally change. But every single game this tournament and all season, it has been, we're doing things our way. Can you stop us?
Fun Final Four, right? We got two 1 seeds, a 4 seed, and an 11 seed. Some stats from Colin, our producer, sent us this. Some stats from the Yahoo bracket. 66% of projected brackets had UConn in the Final Four. 43% had Purdue. 5% had Alabama. And 1.2% had NC State. It should be a blast. You got a great kind of Cinderella-ish story, even if they are from a power league. And you've got this Edey, DJ Burns, great matchup there. And then UConn trying to, repeat. Good stuff. Great Final Four and look forward to it.
I want to go to one more time to Matt Painter real quick. Okay. So Matt Painter, I think I'm very happy he made the Final Four, got that off his back. especially after the losses to St. Peter's and Fairleigh Dickinson. Great, great basketball coach. The fortunes of college basketball. And who knows how this really would have played out, but Matt Painter was a really good high school basketball player in Muncie, Indiana. And he played AAU basketball with Pat Knight, Bob Knight's son. And Matt Painter wanted to go to Indiana. He loved Bob Knight, and he wanted to get a scholarship offer to go to Indiana. And Bob Knight saw Matt Painter play more than normal because he would play with his son. And so he'd go to watch his son play, and there was Matt. And the whole time, he waffled. I remember him telling me this before he passed away when he was still alive, that he almost offered Matt Painter, liked Matt Painter, just never offered him. And Matt Painter was disappointed and went to Purdue and became a four-year player under Gene Cady and became a terrific player for Purdue. And he should have offered him as a player. But then he gets into the Gene Cady system. Like, he worked for Bruce Weber at Southern Illinois, and then he gets named Cady's successor at Purdue, and since 2005 has run a rock solid, really, really good basketball program that's now finally broken through and maybe building to something even bigger than what it was. And in the last whatever many years it's been at Indiana, they've never had that successor to Bob Knight. And right. I wonder if Bob Knight offers Matt Painter, and the way they play the whole thing, it's kind of stolen Indiana's program in a little ways. And I just wonder, doors opening. Like, if Bob Knight offers Matt Painter and Matt Painter ends up becoming this beloved Hoosier, who's, you know, in-state kid who plays, is gritty, all that stuff, and then ends up being the Indiana coach. What, and does he be the guy that could have succeeded Knight either immediately or soon after and been that bridge guy that everyone's happy with and would have had the blessing in the whole? I don't know, but it's kind of crazy that it was so close, because Indiana would love to have Matt Painter now.
Oh, so I love that you brought that up. I covered Matt Painter in high school. I saw him play at the Indiana High School All-Star Tryouts. And he made the team. His feet couldn't move. He couldn't guard. That's why Knight didn't offer him. He was slow. But he was so skilled and so smart that he could make up for it, because he could pass and he could shoot. And he goes to Purdue and he makes a career out of it, right? And he is clearly a coach on the floor in terms of just understanding everything. And it was – He grew up, absolutely, as you said, he was an Indiana fan. His dad took him to the 1987 Final Four to cheer for the Hoosiers, which they won the championship in New Orleans. I mean, he wanted to go there, and they never got around to offering. And Cady, if I remember correctly, because I've talked to Painter about this, you know, that it was like, you know, their pride was a little bit hurt, and Cady's like, you can sit around and wait for him, but I'm here, right now. And so he opted to go with Purdue. And what an absolute program-turning thing. And I will say, look, there's a lot of basketball coaches, there's a lot of really nice, charming human beings. Not all of them nice, but they're charming, you know, because they're all crazy. But Painter's a great guy. Like, Rick Barnes is a great guy. Would have been happy for Rick Barnes to go to the Final Four, too. Yeah. But Painter's one of those guys who has handled some terrible defeats, some awful March moments, some of the worst that anybody's ever had, with equanimity, with poise, with class, has never been petty, never been bitter, never gotten really angry at anybody. He acknowledges it to himself. Hey, the one common denominator in all of those early NCAA tournament losses was me. Pointed the finger at himself, went back to work, changed the program, made the program better. And so to get this reward, it's nice to see for a guy like that who is, you know, you could probably interview all the other 360 Division I basketball coaches. And if you can find somebody that doesn't like Matt Painter or Rick Barnes, I'd be surprised.
Yeah, first Final Four since, what, for the 80s, right? In the 80s?
1980.
Wow. Yeah, I was just looking at, like, the track record of Painter, right? Well, we all know he lost in the first round last year. Year before that, Sweet 16. Year before that, lost in the first round. He made the Elite Eight in 2019, but
and lost basically on the last second pass and shot when put it in overtime against Virginia. That decided kind of who won that championship. Virginia wins.
Yeah.
Purdue goes home.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Incredible stuff. No, just awesome stuff. And they've been so consistent for so many years. I mean, you go back to his first year there with how he's built the program from 9-19 in 2005-06 to how he's built the program. And finally, almost 20 years, right? 18, 19 years later, he's at the Final Four.
Yeah. He's built it up. Great, great job. All right, we'll be back after this message. All right, my favorite coach is still rolling. Old UConn put a 30-0 run on Illinois. Jeez.
That was unbelievable to watch. Holy moly.
There's still a pretty good chance that we're all just, all this other nonsense is playing for silver, as we said.
Right.
UConn is in the midst of a 2-year tournament stretch, at least, of domination as good as any we've ever seen. I don't know. Someone's going to run the numbers. But what they did to Illinois should be illegal in in most states, at least.
It is in several states.
Several states, yeah. Should have been done inside a caged octagon. Just absolutely beating. Danny Hurley, after humble humility, hell no. Hell no. Love it. Let's kick some more ass. Since everyone, I said something like, if fans are obnoxious, our fans are terrible, that who cares? Like, I love it. He found some rando tweet by Sean Harrington, a former Illinois player who works in some capacity with ESPN, that suggested that Connecticut would not be able to stop Terrence Shannon Jr.
Oh, my.
And they stopped him did you hear about this, Pat? No?
No. Yeah. I didn't know.
Oh, yeah. So, of course, they stopped him to a tune of 8 points, 2-12 shooting. Harrington wrote that he would be the best player, and they hadn't faced anyone like Terrence Shannon and all this stuff. I mean, Sean Harrington didn't even know the coach. He's just a guy who played in Illinois.
Who is this? He just found a random Twitter person?
It's not. He played at Illinois. But it's like a former player. Sean Harrington is former Illinois shooting guard, current ESPN analyst. So he wrote, I guess you guys missed. Maybe I thought more people.
Yeah, I missed this. The coaches are always digging for motivation, aren't they? They're always digging for it. Yeah.
He has 7,000 followers, okay? No offense to Sean, but it's not like Jay Billis was on ESPN screaming about how UConn's going to get their ass kicked, right? Yeah. It was like, who the hell is this guy? So Sean Harrington says it. So he's like, right, UConn has not had to deal with a team as athletic and as physical as the Illini. Please don't care Shannon to Bowie. Shannon, that's Northwest. Shannon is not going to be held to single digits. Oh, yeah, he was. Castle will be in foul trouble. No, he won't. Northwestern was down 2 starters in the game against UConn. Like, it wasn't. Let's see. Terrence Shannon Jr. will be the best player on the floor Saturday. UConn doesn't have a good answer for him. So, okay. So Danny Hurley combing the depths of the internet so he can absolutely find something to get angrier, because he's not angry enough about everything, finds this thing. So he says, it was the tweet that was sent to me. I got the tweet. I'm not on there a lot. I turned the notifications off, which is a game changer to me. I like the slights. I think there's obviously a lot of experts out there, but we like those external things. Again, we picked closer to fourth than we were third in the Big East preseason poll. Any external that you give us, we heard the things the players are saying in the lead up to this one. It goes on. Where does he say earlier about the tweet? I don't know. He goes off on everything. All right.
Everything. Oh,
the Big East is a monster. Big East a monster. Iron sharpens iron. I mean, this stuff's just fantastic. He goes, there it is. I read a tweet last night from former Illinois player Sean Harrington, who's a good player, McDonald's All-American. One of the staff members wanted to add a little more fuel to my fire, a little something. Statements like that are just asinine. You're going against beasts and monsters every night in the Big East. It just goes on. The guy's crazy. I love him. His team's crazy. Larry David, Mike, was there. How about that? Of course he's a UConn fan. Danny Hurley's, he could win the next 10 national titles.
He
may kill someone if he doesn't. He's awesome.
The only thing that may derail him is he may just combust on the sidelines. Yeah. You know, that's it. Because, oh, he's a lunatic. But an endearing lunatic. He acknowledges his own lunacy, right?
Yes.
He knows he's crazy. He coaches crazy. But his team is brilliant and overpowering. I mean, they absolutely have destroyed everybody. 10 straight NCAA wins, tournament wins, all by double digits. Colin, our producer, says average margin is 23 points, which is crazy. And I mean, this was a not safe for work beatdown, what he did to Illinois. I mean, that was ugly. Illinois soiled itself, okay? Right? Illinois just choked to a degree. They really did. They just folded, shriveled, and died. Like, Tennessee would have never gone down that way. Purdue would not have gone down that way. Illinois went down that way. But Connecticut has a way of making teams go down that way. I mean, they have just crushed 10 straight teams in the tournament. They are a phenomenal machine. And yes, I do feel like we're probably just marking time until they hang the repeat banner. But I do want to see Connecticut and Purdue in the final because I think those are the two best teams. And, you know, I would love to see that matchup. But good luck even to Purdue if they get that far.
Yeah, I think it was after their win in the Sweet 16, they maybe matched Michigan State's tournament consecutive streak of double-digit wins. Remember Michigan State back in, what, early 2000s? Pat,
probably, yeah. It would have been 2001, probably.
01, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And I think it was 9 straight of double digits. So I'm guessing, right, they've exceeded that, and they've broken the record. That would be 10 straight double-digit wins in the NCAA tournament. It's incredible. And I think he self-proclaimed asshole. Right, Dan Hurley, self-proclaimed asshole, as he said. He called himself an asshole, and his fans on social media just complete. Right, what did he call them? We're just crazy or something on social media. I forgot exactly what his quote was, but it was something like our fans
are obnoxious
on social media. So hey, at least he's admitting it all. You know,
He wears it. Yeah, I feel bad because I don't know where this quote came from. I don't think it was from the post-game press conference. It was probably some reporter doing a good job, and I apologize for not having who gave this quote, but he talked about how after last year he was even more focused on winning after winning the first one because it was important to me to show my fan base and my players that they're not going to get some guy that's going to rest on his laurels after winning one. He's not just going to go and ring the bell at the stock exchange and go hang out with Biden and then take a year off and do the honeymoon expletive. I'm an obsessed coach and I'll be more maniacal the next couple of days than I was in the ones leading up to this. I promise you, when this season's over, it's going to get worse.
Wow.
And this is how Bob Hurley won like 9,000 games as a high school coach. By just, there was no chill, nothing to shut off the motor. And Danny is clearly cut out of the same cloth.
He's the best.
Yeah.
I love it. Go UConn. And we talked about like his dad was a parole officer and such a maniacal high school basketball coach. He made the Naismith Hall of Fame, not a high school basketball Hall of Fame, the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame.
And deserved it.
The main one. Yeah, and deserved it. There ain't anybody going. Like, Jordan walks through there and is like, oh, yeah, Coach Hurley, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. And he was a parole officer during the day. And then his brother was, you know, one of the great point guards of all time. And then he was the younger brother who was really good but was always fighting for scraps in a place where there weren't many. So, God bless him. Dan Hurley has just turned into a thing. Alabama, I love this team. It is a true team. And maybe they can shoot their way past Connecticut. They're going to have to hit everything. One night it's Grant Nelson from North Dakota State. The next night it's Mark Sears from Ohio U. The Elite Eight game, it's Jaron Stevenson, who is a big recruit, but he was like reclassified. And like this tournament in the NCAA tournament went for 7-2, 0 points, and then 19. Like, it's his night. and Nick Pringle, a JUCO transfer, Pringle. 16-11. That guy had 14 games this year. Nick Pringle had 14 games this year with 5 points or fewer, including a couple zeros.
Yeah.
And he and Stevenson had a zero in the Sweet 16. They're dominating to go to this team. You don't know who's coming at you with the Nate Oates team. And if they can shoot and get it going, they have to truly outscore. And I know this is obvious, but if they can get 100, maybe they can beat Connecticut. But they can get 100. That's, I guess, my point. Like, they can get a game into the 90s and maybe they can win this thing.
Oh, sure.
But they're going to have to.
That's it. They're pure high octane offense. You know, again, they run and they chuck, but if they're hitting, it becomes a whole different deal. But that's Nick Pringle was came into the game a 52% free throw shooter. He shoots the free throws with one hand because he's bad at it. So it's like one of those where you balance the ball on your right hand and you take the left hand off. Not quite Don Nelson, if anybody's that old, but to shoot that way. And he made 8 out of 13 free throws to help him pull away from Clemson. And then the Sweet 16 game was when they beat North Carolina, Mohamed Diabate, who had done – oh, no, he was more against – he was Grand Canyon. He scored 9 points in that game. Hadn't really done much of anything all year. 9 points, 5 rebounds. So they got a lot of guys. And they throw them out there, and they see who's playing well, and they keep riding them. The main guys are Mark Sears, of course, the transfer from Ohio University, Aaron Estrada, the transfer from Hofstra, and Grant Nelson, the transfer from North Dakota State. Nate Oates can cook it up with whoever, whatever, and style of play, a lot like Purdue, but totally different in terms of style, but they tend to make other teams play the way they want to play. If they can somehow do that to UConn, look out. I don't anticipate it, but going to be one to watch.
Nate Oates, of course, right? Former Detroit high school, Detroit area, right? Romulus.
Yep.
Romulus High School. Not long ago.
No, not long ago.
They went
at
to
all.
Buffalo.
2015,
10 years.
Maybe?
Not even 10 years.
2013.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a high school coach. So 11 years ago, he was a high school basketball coach, putting together an incredible run at Romulus. And then, like Dan said, got the Buffalo assistant job, got the head job. And then I saw it, Dan, you retweet Nate Oates. He had tweeted a picture of him and AD Greg Byrne, Alabama AD Greg Byrne, on the flight home with the final, with the trophy from the regional. And he had put a thread of his tweet with Greg Byrne in the plane on the flight to Tuscaloosa when Greg hired him from Buffalo, which I don't know. I mean, y'all could probably speak more of it better on it than I could. But I mean, he obviously done a great job at Buffalo. I'm sure he was a hot name, but gosh, you know what? Like at the time,
nobody,
a guy
culture,
6 years before,
he doesn't know the South. You're just taking the hot guy. Yeah, no, that was a great hire by Alabama, obviously. No question. And again, it's a lot. You transfers, you get your guys, you get a team, you have a full team. My theory on how the Blue Bloods are doing panned out.
Mm-hmm.
Where's your Nike and Adidas?
Yeah.
It wasn't the Wild West when Nike and Adidas just stacked all the teams and ran the whole sport. This is the Wild. This is horrible. This kid's from North Dakota is doing stuff. The rich will get richer. No, they won't. Not anymore.
No.
Please speak in reality. Nike and Adidas don't run your sport anymore. That's a good thing, you clowns.
It took 44 minutes into the pod, Dan.
Tell us, what do you want me to do? What happened to all the Duke guys?
I was wondering how long it would take, longer than I thought.
Don't worry. Someone will tell. It's horrible. It's just the rich are going to get richer. When? The rich just got poorer. Again, another Final Four. UConn is the king of them all. They're the real blue blood. But it isn't because Nike stacks their team.
No. No.
You guys sat there and let Nike and Adidas cheat for 40 freaking years on this sport, and now you're crying because they're not?
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
Purdue has not been the favored recruiting child of Nike. That's for sure. NC State, certainly not the favored recruiting child of Adidas.
Well, Adidas did throw a few bags of cash around for NC State. It just never worked.
They did end up in the FBI deal. Yeah.
But yeah, their best player they got off the bounce from Tennessee than Winthrop. Like it's different. It's right. Okay. Stop believing that all the Saints that were going to the Final Four every year, those genius coaches just happened to get there. Someone victimized them. They got victimized with all those lottery picks.
Yeah. I think Kansas would like to go back to being victimized.
Where's the victims? Right. Somebody victimized me. All right, I got to get to the women's tournament, and I'm going to try to recap this thing, okay?
Yeah.
So far, we have had multiple NCAA games played on a floor that had inaccurate dimensions.
Yeah, how about that? They don't know how to measure in Portland or what?
They do not know how to measure the three-point line in Portland.
I mean,
there's a quote from Ross right there.
Yeah. And games were played and no one noticed.
No one noticed.
And it took until the NC State ended up beating Texas, they figured out that the lines were off.
Who figured
before
it out?
The game,
do we know?
Right? Before the game.
Before.
Before the coaches, NC State, they asked each coach, do they want to play?
Yeah, but who figured it out? A finder fee.
I don't know who did it, but the coaches were pacing off.
They were just made aware.
Thursday and Friday and Saturday, four games were played on this court, and no one noticed.
Yeah.
Is anyone watching this tournament on TV? They tell me there's huge numbers. No audience said, wait a minute. Look at that. That ain't painted right. What is going on?
Yeah. That's the kind of thing. If it were golf on TV, somebody would have pointed that out in 8 seconds. Everybody's calling the violations from home, you know?
The three-point line in one end of the court was shorter than the other. They just said, okay, we'll play anyway.
How much shorter do we know?
I don't. Let me see.
The
NCAA has launched an investigation, which means they'll get around to it.
We're
going to form
a committee and a subcommittee. Yeah.
Bon Shonigan King is the painter. There's a guy with a paintbrush in Portland, Oregon, just hired Bon Shonigan King. he's been banned. He's been banned from working the next West Coast Conference game. You're not allowed to paint the court.
Subcommittee, congressional hearing.
Oh, there'll be committees.
Maybe this ends up in the hands of the CFP committee. Who knows? Football handle it.
Okay, that ain't even all of it. Okay, hold on.
Oh, no.
We had a star player for Notre Dame had to be taken out of the game by the refs to have her nose ring pulled out. She had it covered, but then they deemed the nose ring could not just be covered. It had to be pulled out. It got stuck, and the training staff appeared to use a pair of pliers to get the nose ring out. Okay.
In the middle of the game, the game's going on, right? She's missing valuable minutes.
And seems like this could have been worked out before.
Like, I think she had that thing all year, right?
Yeah, she did.
She played with it, I think, with the cover or something on. Yeah.
Who knows? She had it covered. Total ridiculousness. There was a game between Chattanooga and NC State last week, and the ref in the middle of the game had to be replaced because they figured out that ref had a master's degree from Chattanooga.
And had officiated a previous game with Chattanooga, apparently, earlier in the season. So, hey, man.
Background checks.
But, content for days.
Content for days. This tournament is fantastic. I love this. Keep it going.
Keep it running.
Two teams got stuck at a racist hotel in Idaho or something.
Not even a laughing matter, but my God,
what is happening? I'm right.
Which,
sorry.
Dan has sparked the argument that, you know, games should be moved, I guess, to neutral, like women's games should be moved all to neutral courts instead of the first round, which is, you know, at home sites. Right. But actually, you know, I don't think these people were doing that
because of who they're rooting for.
No, it wasn't. But for some reason, you know, that's been kind of a sparked a little debate over the last week or so. I love the first weekend of the women's tournament at home venues. I wish they had the second weekend at home venues. I love it. I think it's great. Just like the CFP, when we talk about the CFP having home games. I mean, that's where it's really at.
They paint the court properly, yeah. I'll tell you that. So not a laughing matter, these poor teams that got stuck with the white supremacists yelling at them.
But that's wild.
Total madhouse, right? I don't mean to make too much. Then we had the reigning national championship coach go on a preemptive nuclear strike at a press conference against the Washington Post that was supposedly about to publish a hit piece.
Yeah.
Well, the hit piece turned out to be a pretty fair and balanced look, a very interesting look at her. But then the LA Times couldn't let long enough enough. So they come off the top rope with this absurd, absurd column. I was like, this did not get printed. I read
Dirty
it. I could
debutantes,
not believe
it. I think was a, I think they removed that line, thankfully.
I don't even know how that got printed. The LA Times. And so Kim Mulkey turned out to be right in the long run. She said the wrong paper. She said the wrong paper.
That's right.
All of this, I haven't even mentioned Caitlin Clark's playing LSU on Monday.
Oh, Monday
this tournament
night.
Is bonkers.
Monday night, right. The game. Monday
the
night.
Game. And if you're new to this, please do not take my laughter and enjoyment and excitement voice in my voice as some kind of like, this is all I want. I like hockey fights. I want the brawls. I want when the NASCAR guys smash each other. That's it. This is it. This tournament is crazy. You don't know what's going to happen next.
No. The women's tournament has been completely off the rails. Completely. And, you know, for all of the kerfuffle a couple of years ago about the men's tournament was more professionally run, the women's tournament was kind of half-assed. Oh, well, guess what? Having a mislined court doesn't help you. Having an official that you have to take off out of the game in the middle doesn't help you there. So, good luck to the NCAA.
The Utah women's basketball team, that shined a light on something else. Why are they staying 45 minutes away?
Yeah,
from the
Coeur d'Alene, Idaho.
That's absurd.
A lot of issues they can work through on that. And that part was like ridiculous. I mean, that's just, I don't even know what to say. In fairness, I don't think the NCAA expected that Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, the hotel there, were targeted by white supremacy. It's just so beyond the pale.
That would happen anywhere, right?
It I'm should never sure happen anywhere in this country. But yes, the tournament is in that, like, it's like the early stages of the UFC. Like, they used to have, like, Mickey's Wide Mouth beer. That was their beer. Like, Mickey's Wide
kidding.
Mouth. Yeah. That like, stuff, you know, Mickey's and eventually you,
terrible.
You get to, well, yeah, horrible but, you know, beer. You can't. They're getting now. They're going through the growing pains, and they're going to get to all their stuff. So I don't know. Anyway, Monday night, a lot of people hear it before, after. Like, this has got to be the most anticipated Elite Eight game in women's college basketball history. Everyone is excited about Caitlin Clark in Iowa versus Angel Reese and LSU, rematch of last year's national championship game. I'm not going to say it's the most anticipated game of all time. Some of those Connecticut Tennessee games were absolutely huge, but you needed they needed to crawl or they needed to walk so these guys could run. The ratings are going to be phenomenal. You don't have to sell this as women's basketball. Oh, roots for it's just an awesome scene. This is just going to be an awesome sport competition. Who doesn't want to watch it? Like, you got to be kind of like, I hate to not want to see what the heck is going to happen in this basketball game. Who knows what Mulkey's going to wear? Who knows what Angel Reese is going to do? Who knows what Caitlin Clark's going to do? Who knows what any of them? It's going to be like, can you recall a women's sporting event in college, at least, that is this anticipated, Pat?
No, absolutely not. This is going to be dynamite. And, it was very anticipated when they met last year, and now we've just added so many more layers of accomplishment and interest and personality on both sides of it. So it's going to be fantastic. And the it was nice of the LA Times to completely change the subject for Kim Mulkey with that absurd, like straight out of 1977 kind of morality play column. You know,
I speak dog whistle white guy, man. Like, what are we doing here? Like, what is that? I don't know.
I mean, we've read enough of those. We've been around enough. And when you get in college sports, when you try to get into these are the good people and these are the bad people. You're setting yourself up because it ain't ever black and white. And so they just teed up Kim Mulkey and she smashed that one back at him 350 yards down the middle, you know, and totally changed the subject from the Washington Post story, which was, to your point, was a, it was a really good story. It was not some, you know, like PR disaster for LSU. Mulkey poured gasoline onto the fire by doing her preemptive strike about it and saying that they're gonna sue him or whatever. But it was a good look at Kim Mulkey. Really interesting. So anyway, the women's tournament has been ludicrous, and I can't wait to see the ludicrous endings.
It's been fun, and that's what you want. It can't all just be, this is great, this is great. You want controversy and chaos. That's how you build a sport.
Yeah. Yeah, you you know, sometimes to an extent, we have to have good versus, quote, good versus evil. The LA Times put a interesting spin on the good versus evil, but there is something to that. And
there's something to be said for, I want to root. I have a team I root for and a team I don't want to win. And whatever, it's like Duke, right? Like people were really enjoying the game because they don't want Duke to win. It has nothing to do with the kids on Duke or John Shire, who are every one of them. It's probably a terrific person. It's just, that's sports.
Yeah.
Duke's won enough, right? It's okay. And that's it.
And, you know, I this obviously the Kim Mulkey story. I mean, she's unlike so many in college athletics in the way that she's so polarizing. And she has kind of almost split the country, if you would. And there are a whole group that kind of roots for her and a group that roots against her. And so anytime she's involved in anything, right, it gets, because she's polarizing, it adds intrigue, right? And then you've got her and her team against, you know, one of the best women's basketball players in her team that we've ever seen in a rematch of the national championship game. So it's incredible. It feels like a game that should be in the Final Four.
Yeah, you're right. That, like, we've got that. It's a great formula. You have a lightning rod coach and a transcendent talent as a player. And Angel Reach is pretty damn transcendent too. And Flo J. And I mean, there's a lot of good players in that game. And my hope is that that game can be viewed as a basketball game and reported on and written about as a basketball game and not some referendum on everything else. Because that would actually be true progress for women's basketball. That we don't have to write about it as a referendum on things outside of the actual competition. Mm. I really look forward to a good game that's covered as a game.
Yeah. And I think people are excited to see who wins. I think you're going to get a huge sports fan audience on that just are really interested in that. Because Caitlin Clark is the most exciting women's basketball player I've seen, and the LSU team is very, very good, defending champs or reigning champs, and there's just so much to it. So that's going to be awesome. Maybe you hear this after Monday night, and we already know what happens.
Caitlin Clark, by the way, offered $5 million to play in the Big Three tournament. You guys see that?
Whoa, yeah, I did see that.
Really?
Yeah, $5 million.
Yeah, Ice Cube.
Yeah.
Ice Cube offered her $5 million.
Ice Cube went public with it without like officially offering her, because they were waiting for the tournament to end, but the news leaked. Mm-hmm. And then so Ice Cube just went public with, yeah, we did. We offered her $5 million. So we're waiting for an answer, or we're gonna give it to her after the tournament. So
I don't think she's gonna Monday, take it.
Yeah, you would imagine. Monday night's game. Yeah, I think Dan's right. Folks wanna see the result. Because you could have, you know, one of the best careers in women's basketball end, obviously with Caitlin Clark, but then you could have the end of Kim Mulkey in her 23-24 team that won the championship last year. So, yeah, all eyes on that game. I can't imagine. I'm guessing that we're looking that on a Monday. You got all the recipe, right? A Monday night, late night TV, 7, 8 o'clock, whatever it is. Reigning national championships, Kim Mulkey, best basketball player in the game right now. That rating is going to be pretty strong. I'm guessing it'll be up there with some of the best in, you know, women's tournament that we've seen.
Yeah, it's going to be really good. All right, we've said a lot of mean things, a lot of ridiculous things on this podcast.
We did get Wetzel to acknowledge West Lafayette. So we did it.
That was the nice part I said. I should have saved it for this. No, we've said a lot of grumpy, mean things, but it's time to find our happy place and say something nice, courtesy of our friends at Prime Video. Ross, Pat, it's time to be nice. Tell me something positive about March Madness. Pat, I can start with you.
I'm ready.
Go for it.
I'm going to say something positive about the Atlantic Coast Conference, which has been under siege, which has been in churn and angst and controversy and conflict. And frankly, I thought that the product wasn't that great this year, and they still got a team in the Final Four. And guess what? In the last 3 years, they have had four teams in the Final Four, and they're all different teams. We had Duke and North Carolina in 22. We had Miami last year, and now we got NC State. They've had seven teams in the Elite Eight, and five of those are different. They've had eight in the Sweet 16, and their tourney record is 33-14 the last 3 years. So the ACC, which really does care more about basketball than anybody other than the Big East, those two are the bedrock basketball leagues, has showed out. And I hope, you know, the league can find some stability and some happiness and some unity here. But even if they can't, they're still winning in basketball. They're still doing good in basketball.
Hunky. I'm sure it's all hunky dory sunshine in the ACC. I'm going to say something nice. I'm going to stay in the ACC, say something nice about Kevin Keats, basketball coach at NC State. Just unbelievable run, right? On the brink of probably being fired. At eighth or ninth season, I think, at the school. They went 9-11 this year in conference, finished 10th in the league before this run. I don't know. I'm trying to think of a team with a coach in a similar position. And I'm sure there's been one before this, but I think of that Georgia team that made the run through the SEC tournament when their tornado hit the Georgia Dome in 2008 and won all the elimination games. But they got in the NCAA tournament. I believe they lost in the first round. So they didn't make it very much through the NCAA tournament. But it's just fascinating run. And hey, he's locked and loaded from getting fired to getting a lot more money and having at least a Final Four banner. But man, this team, who knows what they'll do down the stretch. I saw there's some videos kind of coming out of DJ Burns after the press conference. He went from the press conference and on his walk to the locker room, he made a detour and swung through and saw a bunch of like security ladies and like posed and took selfies with them. And there's all these videos of it. I mean, what a great story. It's awesome. So kudos. Something nice to Kevin Keats in NC State.
Yeah. Pretty lovable. Pretty lovable.
I'm going to say something nice about Dalton Connect. And this guy, he is a high school sophomore in the suburbs of Denver. He was 5'8". And he would shoot, practice a shot and tell everybody he was going to be his basketball player. And he was 5'8". And he got to 6'1", in high school and turned out to be pretty good senior year. Really good, 21 points a game, but he's still only 6'1" and no one had recruited him. No one knew who he was. So he goes to Northeastern Junior College in Colorado and grows a couple more inches. And he's pretty good as a freshman, 13 points a game, 2.9 rebounds. But this isn't even like the high level junior college. Okay, this is like Colorado basketball. This isn't the Kansas ones or anything like that. Then he comes along as a sophomore, has this big year, 23.9 points, 7.5 rebounds, and he grows 3 more inches. Now all of a sudden he's 6'6". But nobody's recruiting Northeastern Junior College in Colorado, so he signs with Northern Colorado University. And he goes there And his first year there, now his junior year, basically, of college, he only averages 8.9 points a game. By no means is a star, just a guy on the team. This is 2 years ago, mind you. Then as a senior, much like his senior year in high school and his last year at junior college, he blows up 20.2 points a game, has this big season. He's got an extra year eligibility because of COVID. He goes to Tennessee, and he becomes the SEC Player of the Year and a first-team All-American, and he damn near shot the Volunteers into the Final Four. And I don't know. I was texting with an NBA guy today. He ain't out of the question, right? He ain't out of the question. He makes a team or maybe a rotation. He can really shoot. He's got some limitations.
He's a first-round pick now.
But late first-round pick, right? Oh, maybe he's higher.
They're talking lottery. I've seen projections with him in the lottery.
The defense will be an issue. Maybe he is.
Defense will be an issue.
I hope he's a lottery pick. This kid, fantastic. What a great player. Tennessee would have lost that game by a lot of points today, except for Dalton Connect. But talk about the dream. He's a 5'8 sophomore in high school. Now he's a 6'6 potential lottery pick, I guess. We'll see. Maybe he does get there. But what a career, and a true career of nothing ever given to him, just keep building and building and building. So great job by Dalton. Great season, and good luck in the draft process.
I'm very happy for him. He's a nice young man. I went down the story on him in January, ran in February. But, yeah, he's made a lot out of a little. And the only fault I can find with Dalton Connect is that he's from Colorado and he's a Raiders fan. That's kind of unforgivable, but I'm working towards forgiveness.
Yeah, that's it. All right. So there you have it. We proved three grumps can actually say something positive for once. Thanks to Prime Video. Find your happy place and take the stress out of streaming with Prime Video. All right. That is our show. We will be back midweek to preview the Final Four, and who knows what else will happen. Women's Final Four and any football news that goes down, we will get to. So appreciate everyone listening, sharing us on social media, telling your friends about us. We will talk to you later.